Wondering how to navigate local, city, state, or the federal government in order to grow your business, secure funding for your nonprofit, or advance your organization's agenda? Welcome to Lobbying Insider, a podcast that brings listeners to the intersection of business and government to provide a rare perspective on how things actually get done. We will dive into some pressing current issues, provide keen observations from the past, and keep an ever-watchful eye on what's coming next. I'm your host, Zach Fink, Director of External Affairs at Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron. Glad to have you with us. Welcome to the podcast. We are joined by the members of EAC, which stands for Empower, Assist, and Care. Can you both introduce yourselves, starting with you, Neela?
Sure. I am Neela Mukherjee-Lockel, President and CEO of the EAC Network.
I'm Robert Strickoff, the Chief External Affairs Officer for the EAC Network.
Okay, for our listeners who may be uninitiated, maybe just tell us a little bit about the work you do and what you've been focused on these last several years.
So EAC Network is a large social service organization. We provide a vast array of services, but the five pillars of our programming are focused on children and youth, family and community, seniors and senior nutrition, criminal justice and behavioral health, and vocational services. And we also offer mediation services through the Long Island Dispute Resolution Center. Our footprint covers all of Long Island, all five boroughs of New York City, Rockland County, and we have a handful of clients in the Lower Hudson Valley.
Okay, gotcha. And you've been around about half a century, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's 55 years this year. And, you know, we were founded by three strong women in Port Washington. And I think their goal was to assist people in the education world. And we've gone from Education Assistance Corporation and really focused on education to EAC, which is, as Neela talked about, a really large social service, not-for-profit, Suffolk, Nassau, New York City, Rockland County, over 114 programs. So our elevator speech is 2 hours long.
Right.
But really what we do is help people navigate really complex systems.
Right.
So we hold their hands. Not all of our clients are justice impacted. But they are all involved in various different systems. And so our work has been to really make sure that they can navigate and succeed and get to a better place in their life. So usually people are dealing with a variety of life's challenges.
And navigating that must be very difficult because we're talking about several different systems, right?
Yes.
I mean, you have county, you have local. New York City alone is a maze that can be unknown to most people, you know? Is that complicated and do you need specialists within each jurisdiction?
100%. You know, I think that in broad strokes, we have a vision for each of our areas of service. But here in New York City, it's really important that the people who are leading and delivering the direct services are really familiar with the communities, with the other services, with our partner agencies, with the systems that exist in New York City, and have not just the knowledge, but also have the relationships to help our clients get to a better place.
And is it primarily government funding? Do you get grants and that kind of thing?
Yeah, most of it is government funding through through the federal, state, and local governments. Yeah. We work very closely with the New York City Council, with the New York State Legislature, with the mayor here in New York City, and with the governor, and with the county executives and the legislators in all of the counties that we work in. But we also have private funding, right? We have three events a year that we try to raise money to supplement the funding that we get from the government, because it's never enough.
Of course. And the need is very great, right? I mean, the need is insatiable in a lot of ways, especially in places like New York City.
So I think that we are, ideally, we want to put ourselves out of business. Yeah. But the truth is that the need is immense. The needs are immense.
Right. And so it's probably not happening anytime soon.
It's not happening anytime soon. And we could get a grant for $100,000 and we would really need to add another zero or two to that to really provide the depth of services that we would love to be able to provide. But I will say that we do a great job of working with our partners and collaborating to make sure that our clients do get access to what they need. And the need is growing. We're still coming out of COVID. There is a lot of transition locally, nationally, and individuals, families, and communities are all being impacted by that.
I do want to focus on criminal justice because I just, having spent a lot of time in Albany these last 10 years or so, there's been a real emphasis by the Democrats in particular to decarcerate, to get people out of the criminal justice system. That the thought was that there was this really harmful cycle and that people would go in and then they're likely to go back in, and that we kind of have to move away from that. And I guess I would ask you both, I mean, has there been more openness on the part of district attorneys and law enforcement, even politicians who might talk, you know, quote unquote, tough on crime, to sort of seek out new solutions and helping people get on their feet rather than end up back in the very system they're trying to get out, get away from?
I would say absolutely. I'm very grateful that there is a much more open-minded view towards the impact of this kind of work. The reality is when people go into the system or are incarcerated, despite the best of intentions, there are too many people and there's just not enough services and there's not enough specific care. And listen, people are incarcerated for a reason, and I oftentimes I kind of understand that. Yeah. And I also feel like people need to get the services they need so that they can return to society. Our goal is not to put everybody in jail. Our goal at EAC Network is to help people get better and to live better lives. That's really what we want to do. And so we really believe that through these kinds of programs, through diversion programs, through reentry programs, through health home programs, through vocational services and counseling, we are helping people to not just maintain, but to actually achieve more things, to achieve a better life, and to make better choices. And so that's what we want the public to know.
And what's the most common thing that you deal with in terms of a program? I mean, is it building certain life skills, vocational skills? Is it substance abuse? I mean, is it mental health? Like, what do you find are some of the more common reasons someone may end up on the wrong end of the criminal justice system?
You know, Crystal Stanton is New York City Division Director, and she's been in on the other side of the table in prisons, in correctional facilities. She knows and understands that you can't arrest your way out of this issue, right?
Right.
Whether you live in New York City or Long Island, public safety is probably the number one issue that we all deal with. And she says, instead of being tough on crime, we want to be smart on public safety. And I think part of that smartness is dealing with people's issues. We deal with people that are nonviolent felonies and misdemeanors. And instead of just sending them off to Rikers Island or sending them off, to languish in jail, we're going to provide the services. We're the case managers for their services. We have a million stories of people who just don't know where those services are available or if they're available for them.
Right.
So part of what we do is equity. It's people who do not understand or know that those services are available. So you ask the question, what services are we providing? It's mental health. It's substance abuse, case management, so that they can get through the system on the other side. Be smart on public safety, and that's what we talk about.
And so it's primarily or exclusively nonviolent? I mean, do you deal?
No, okay. We work with all.
You work with all, okay. And what are there different challenges there, I would imagine, in terms of reentry and in terms of people? I mean, are there certain situations where you would ever say or have a member of your staff, a social worker, say, this person just can't function? Like they're going to keep coming back into the criminal justice system.
Well, so I would say one of the best things that people would say about EAC Network's services and programs in New York City is our assessments. And so our ability to work with clients, evaluate them, work with other partners to ensure that the people that we're going to work with and recommend into additional services have the ability to get to the other side. Part of our evaluation is ensuring that that the courts and our partners are making the best assessments possible. And there are times where individuals have much greater, much deeper needs, and we will provide those evaluations to the courts and share that. So we recognize that our goal here is public safety, right? The ultimate goal is public safety. And so what we don't want to do is mislead people and say, yes, we can solve everybody's problems.
Right.
But we can solve a lot of people's problems. We can really help people get onto a better path. And we're really grateful for the opportunities to be able to have that kind of impact and to work with individuals and then hear back from them, you know, a few years down the road and see that they have stabilized and have gotten employment and are doing better.
I think there's a tendency in the media to sometimes really play up high incident crimes, right? And you had a recent example where a guy kind of went on a killing spree across Manhattan and stabbed three people, I think, in a matter of just hours. And I just, for some people, they'll look at that and they'll say, what's happening here? Are people like that falling through the cracks? Are they not getting to services? Is he not big enough to handle, you know, the people, all the need that is out there? How does something like that happen?
I mean, I think that it's a combination of a few things, right? Number one, clearly there is mental health at stake here, right? So these individuals often have a lot of mental health issues. And I think having a path through that is important. And our programs are not to say that nobody should be having to deal with the consequences of their actions.
Crimes.
They
right.
need
okay.
to deal with the consequences of their crimes. But the idea is we want people who are going to be out on the streets and back in their communities to be better. We want them to have the services. We want them to feel stable. We want them to have people to turn to. People need community. We are hardwired as individuals, as human beings, to connect. And so if you have an individual who has mental health issues and then you isolate them, maybe they're dealing with the consequences of their actions, but that is not necessarily helping them get better. So if this individual is going to be returned to the community,
they need to be socialized
down the road,
on some level.
They need to be socialized. They need to have a support system and a network. And that's the kind of thing that EAC Network does. We're not just saying don't send people to jail. What we're saying is we can help some people. Not everybody needs to be incarcerated for things. And as people are coming back into the community, they need resources and support. And that's what we're
that's
here to
critical,
do.
Right?
That
I mean,
is critical.
Because we were talking off mic a little bit earlier just about recidivism rates, and you've had some really good success with that specifically, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, go ahead, Neela.
Our numbers are about 50% better or
double the success rate of recidivism in New York State.
Thank you.
Okay. So people who go through your programs are that much more likely not to repeat, not to go back to jail.
In New York State, it's about 51% of people get rearrested in the next 2 years. And the people that go through our program, it's about between 21 and 26% citywide.
Okay.
And that's empirical data that demonstrates that our program works and that people that we work with are getting better, are getting more stable, and stability is one of the keys to public safety. And I think that's such an important part. Neela talked about the assessment, and that is a tool that the DAs use throughout the five boroughs, and in Rockland County, we have this program in Rockland County and Nassau and Suffolk as well. But particularly in the city, that assessment is important. We want the DA and the judges to know and understand that tool is available. We also want criminal defense attorneys to know and understand, because many of them don't know that these programs and these treatment cases are available to their clients. We are talking to defense attorneys like, oh, I didn't know that that was available. So part of what we're trying to do here is to really raise awareness for our programs, raise awareness for the impact that we have so that the most amount of people know and understand what's out there and they can use those tools. That assessment is a huge tool to whether this person's going left, right, or down the middle. And that is something that we work in partnership with legal defense, with the criminal bar of each borough, with the judicial system, and NYPD.
So when someone gets out, they need to have resources. They need ideally family, right, or a community to live amongst. But even, it sounds like from what you're saying, your programs can provide that on some level as well.
What we do really is work with our partners. And so sometimes we have programs in-house to help people with these needs. And sometimes we rely on our partners. And we're really grateful to be in a community of organizations that are all committed to this kind of work. And we know that if somebody has a stable place to live, they have a little stability, they have a solid place to live, and if they have a purpose, if they have a reason to wake up in the morning, that they are already well on their way to living a better life, right? And so EAC network, case managers are working with individuals to build that sense of community, to help them find a stable place to live, to get them the training, the resources, clothing, to go on a job interview, a Metro card to be able to get to an interview, and to ensure that they...
Stuff that people take for granted, frankly, right? Right. People don't even think about that.
Exactly. When you are released from jail, you're given maybe X amount of dollars, right? I forget what the exact number is right off the top of my head right now. But then you have to think about how are you going to spend that money, mm-hmm. right? That money is not going to get you far. But if you've been incarcerated for 20 years, maybe you want breakfast.
Right.
Right?
Maybe you need breakfast.
Maybe you need breakfast.
Yeah.
Maybe getting on the subway is terrifying, and maybe you need a cab ride home.
Right.
And so now you've eaten up almost all the money that you just came out with. And so what we recognize is that individuals who are coming out of incarceration need resources, they need community, they need people they can turn to, they need systems that are designed to help them be successful versus coming out and then being left on their own to find their way. And it may seem easier to just take what you need.
Right.
Because at that point, it's about survival, right? And so we want to help people get their basic needs met so that they can aim for more than just survival, that they can aim to thrive more in life.
And build their life back.
Build their life back.
You know, Zach, Neela said something there that is vitally important to success of our programs. We are helping people in offender reentry. We're helping people in when they're going back into the community. We're helping people that are going through the criminal justice system. Sometimes they just need that Metro card,
yeah,
right, to go to that job interview, to go to that second job interview. And that might seem like a little, but a little goes a long way when you are trying to rebuild back your life. And those are the things that we raise money for, apart from the government grants and foundations that foundation money that we get. That's one reason that we raise money is that we buy Metro cards, and that little goes a long way.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk to law enforcement, you talk to police, district attorneys, they will often say that it's very often in society the same people who keep going through the system, who come back as repeat offenders. And it goes back to what you were saying again about recidivism rates. And I guess the question would be, what can you do about that? That is not being done now. Obviously, there is nothing to be gained by relocking up the same people over and over again if they're going to come back out and commit the same exact crime or if God forbid, worse.
You know, I think one of the things that we have to contend with is limited resources. That's just a fact, right? And so for years, we have gotten sort of level funding to do the same kind of work, and the asks are greater. The need is greater.
And everything costs more.
And so to have level funding year over year over year over year, and for the needs to be going up and the costs to be going up, and, you know, we can fundraise all day long. It, like I said earlier, every dollar that's given needs a handful of extra zeros to actually be able to meet the need.
Right.
So in terms of being able to reach all the people we're trying to reach, it really, I mean, the first line of defense there is resources, is funding to make sure that we can hire staff, that we can retain staff, we can pay our staff a living wage so that they will stay, and that we can then have the resources to serve more clients, that we can meet the growing needs of our community members and our judicial system to help sift through, to sort through, and to filter out and help individuals who can be benefited by diversion programs and services so that the courts and the systems can really focus their time, energy, and resources where it's most needed.
And it must be frustrating to know that you can help people, but maybe don't have the resources to
Absolutely.
Do so at times, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
that you know that you could be making more of an impact if you could just expand what you're doing.
There's an enormous mental health crisis across the country. And here in New York, we see it very, very, very vividly. And the lack of mental health resources is substantial. And that is 100% a result of a lack of funding.
Is it misunderstood, though, also? I mean, I know that
oh,
people
yes.
with mental illness, it's sometimes hard to get
your arms around it, it may, first of all, it doesn't go fall into one category, right? So it can be very complex and daunting for someone to try and figure out where the resources should be allocated for which specific kinds of ailments.
I think that, you know, we always think about prevention. We talk about prevention a lot, and I think investing in prevention is very, very important. I also think that the reality is people will get services after they're the squeaky wheel.
Right.
And unfortunately,
that's a bad way to do it, right?
The squeaky wheel, they become the squeaky wheel by getting involved in the system. And then that's how they are brought to the attention of people who can potentially provide or direct them towards services. And so while we want to focus on prevention and help people get the services and the interventions they need on the early side, the reality is we're not going to know about all the things until they get a little squeaky. And by then, they may have already painted themselves in a different light. And then people are a little less
sympathetic
right. to their needs.
No, it makes sense. And that's also a frustrating cycle. You know,
absolutely.
when you lose the public on something like this, because you're trying to do this great work to actually help people. I want to go macro with you for just a minute and talk a little bit about Rikers and the situation there. I feel like many years ago, there was this big push to kind of close Rikers and build these community-based jails. But the population, my understanding, would have to be something like below 5,000, which I, as I understand, we're above that now, right? I mean, this is a vexing problem, too, which I don't think gets a lot of press coverage.
You know, I think that the problems at Rikers are substantial. And I think that we all want to see individuals getting what they're needing. I think in order to be successful in this effort to close Rikers, we need to figure out who really needs to be incarcerated and who can be rehabilitated and brought back into the community and given a different direction at life.
Right.
And that is where we can be helpful. Agencies like ours can be very helpful in redirecting people and getting them on a better path, so that we can reduce those numbers, and then we can look better at community-based jails, and ideally in those community-based jails, provide more comprehensive services to ensure that they are getting the quote-unquote rehabilitation that the, you know, originally the intent is supposed to be to rehabilitate people.
And that'll be easier at borough-based facilities?
I believe so.
Okay.
Absolutely, okay. I believe so.
Just because they have the resources or because they're a smaller environment?
I think a smaller environment and more resources would be important. But again, to be fair, I think community-based jails will be a different kind of expense, right? And so it is very important that we are not just blindly incarcerating everybody, that we are taking a look at people's individual needs. And for people who can respond to services and who can benefit from services, get them those services and get them vocational training and put them on a path to living a better life. Get them the medication that they need, if that's what they need, and the mental health services and the supports that are critical, I mean, for so many of us.
Where are we in that process? I know we're in the we've been talking about trying to close it. It's stalled,
it's
right?
Stalled.
And it seems like to a certain extent, that really works against Rikers and makes the population there that much more vulnerable, because it's almost like, well, maybe we're not going to fix this here, or maybe this cell door doesn't work and we're just going to, we're moving out of Rikers, so we're not going to bother to do it. Feels like the neglect has gone up also.
Yeah. You know, closing Rikers Island is not going to solve the problem. Right. Or keeping it open.
Yeah.
Right. We talked about complex services that we help our clients with. That's a very complex problem that the New York City leaders are dealing with. So there's not one simple answer. Right. Closing it versus not closing it. Right. I think Nilo talked about additional services, whether it stays open or closed. We know and understand that additional services are needed. And that's the other part, the other side of the coin, I think, that we deal with is this is a budgetary issue. It's a positive budgetary issue. Our programs, ATI, Mental Health Diversion.
So tell me ATI just quickly.
Alternatives to Incarceration.
Got it. Okay.
Is a buzzword that we all use, right? It's in the industry. It's elected officials understand it. Law enforcement understands it. The judges and the judicial system understands it. You can't just close Rikers Island, or you can't just leave it open and not do anything else, right? People think it's easy. You're on this side or that side. It's got to be, you got to provide these services. So if you provide these services like EAC Network, It's a cash positive for the New York City budget and the New York State budget. To put someone in Rikers Island and house them for a year is upwards of $475,000 a year for one person.
That's crazy.
That's a crazy number, right? Yeah. So the return on investment there is, I don't know what it is. It's terrible.
It's not good.
It's not good.
It's not good.
We know that.
But that same person who is eligible for mental health or substance abuse treatment, that cost to the city is about $20,000.
Yeah.
20 versus 450, and you have a safer community. So the message that we also have is that we're not only helping people, helping communities, but we're also helping the city budget.
You're saving the taxpayers' money, literally.
Right, 100%. And that is something that people can understand.
Yeah.
And that's one of the messages that we want to put out there, is that it's not just helping one person. You're helping the community, but you're also working on the city budget, which is something they talk about every single day.
Well, right, and it puts more strain on everything else. There's less resource, fewer resources for every other program that people promote and want to stand behind, right? So I guess that must be, on some level, a little frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, when we talk to elected officials, no elected official stands up and says, listen, I'm against mental health diversion. Oh, I'm against ATI. Or, hey, listen, I don't care about Rikers Island. They all care about public safety. But what is the right way to do it, right? We said it before, you can't arrest your way out of this. You know, Crystal Stanton says that all the time. You can't arrest your way out of this. You got to provide the services, and you got to have a priority in providing for public safety. If you start there, I think the answers are fairly easy.
Right, and I guess it does seem to be, to go back to what we kind of started with, that to me it seems that there is a better understanding of that than there was in the kind of lock them up and throw away the key 1980s of New York City, right, where there was a zero tolerance for this, and you know, people were doing long sentences for you know, the Rockefeller drug laws for minor amounts of marijuana. I mean, it was insane. You know,
and I think that we are seeing, you know, I'm grateful that whatever movement happened to allow the powers that be or the systems to support more of these kinds of programs, whether it's diversion or reentry programs, and really addressing those needs. But even in our shifting political environment, I hope that we can all remember that the impact of all of this is, as Bob said, is positive for the budget, but also really critical for public safety. Because the answer is not just a top-down response of, you know, empower the police officers or hire more police. It really is about giving people the tools that they need to survive and thrive, right? And so we at EAC Network, through our programs, are helping individuals see that there is hope, that there is life outside of Rikers, that there is a way forward, that people can get training, that people can get that people care about their success and their health and their mental health and their livelihood.
All right. We are going to have to leave it there. You guys are doing incredible work. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing some of this with
us.
We really appreciate
us.
It.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Bob, thanks again.
All right.
The Lobbying Insider is a production of Davidoff, Hutcher & Citron, LLP, New York's premier middle market law firm, practicing in over 20 areas, including commercial litigation, economic development, real estate, and, of course, government relations. The Lobbying Insider is produced by Joe Benti, and our sound recording engineer is Devante Addison. Publicity by Jody Fisher PR, with Beth Ann Mayer at Lemon Seed Creative managing social media. Our podcast platform manager is Monica Thomas. I'm Zach Fink, host of the podcast, and if you'd like to help us spread the word about our show, please share it with colleagues and friends, and be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice. It can be found on Apple, Audible, Google, iHeart, Podbean, and Spotify platforms. Thanks for joining us.